So Rachel Maxwell is the founder of Community Sourced Finance. And boy, there are a lot of layers to what that is, in where communities can buy shares and businesses and figuring out other ways to move money around in our communities and ways that we can support each other that way. So Rachel, welcome.
Thank you. I'm a little weirded out by being behind a podium.
Okay.
Hi. I would love to have you all think about who's in the room. Maybe look around at each other. Just like all the way back, like who's in the corners? Who's next to you? Who's here? There are many beautiful people here, thinking interesting things, doing remarkable work. I would encourage you maybe to soften your gaze a little and think about these people and the energy in this room, and to think everything that is happening in that is represented here, and then to think about who you didn't see, who's not here, who's not in the room, who do you wish were here, who do you think might wish to be here? And maybe we can take another breath together. Thank you. It is a great honor to be here, and I'm very grateful to the folks who asked me to come and speak to you. I am not an economist, and I studied art history as an undergraduate, so I appreciate art, and I was an art dealer for the first decade of my life career. And I'm going to tell you a little bit about my story, because I feel like that's what I have to offer you. I don't have a lot of expertise, but what I do have is a story. And I was an art dealer because I wanted to bring beauty actually into people's homes. And I did that for a decade on the East Coast, and I learned a lot about the market, weirdly. And I didn't actually like it. I hung out with a lot of people who are extremely wealthy, and I needed to convince them to buy things that they didn't need. And I stopped being an art dealer when I gave birth to my first child, and we moved out here to the Pacific Northwest. My husband got a job at the then nascent University of Washington Bothell campus, and we didn't have a heck of a lot of money, but I stayed home with my first child at that time, and for a wide variety of reasons, and it was a good experience for me. But that first year, I became awakened to the greater economy and the way that the rules and regulations around the economy and how we measure things matter. And the way that I became awakened was I was doing my taxes. And I'd filed the EZ prior to that time, but we had purchased a home, a modest home in South Everett, and we were doing the taxes, and I was like, you know, taking the deduction-y stuff and things like that, and I was very excited. This was before you could do it all online. I was very excited about the fact that there was a child care tax credit, that this tax credit was going to make a world of difference to my family because we were going to get some money back. I, after all, was taking care of a child. Well, it turns out the child care tax credit isn't for taking care of a child. It's for paying someone else to take care of a child, which is fine and great. But I was taking... I was like, what? I gave up a salary. Like, it cost me to take care of a child. And that was the first time that I recognized the power of our system to say what matters, because all of a sudden, my work didn't matter. Like, it didn't matter. It was unimportant. It wasn't even worth getting a tax credit for. And that was my beginning awakening, and it was in the very same year that I was just tearing my hair out because we didn't have enough money to do anything, and life was difficult because we'd made this choice, damn it, excuse me, and like we should have gotten that child care tax credit anyway. And I was complaining to my friend who did get a child care tax credit, who's a corporate lawyer in New York, and so is her husband, but they get the child care tax credit. And it was like, I don't have enough money. I don't have enough. And she said to me, get over it, Rachel. No matter how much you have, it will never be enough. And her family is probably earning more than 10 times as much as ours. And I knew she knew. She was being honest with me. They didn't feel like they had enough. And I realized, I had this epiphany that that wasn't the world I was going to live in. I wanted to live in a world where I had enough. I had friends, I had a roof over my head, I had health care. What was not enough about that? So that was my awakening year about the economy and about the idea of this larger system of which gross domestic product is a part. And someone asked last night, what are the one or two levers that we can, like, shift in order to make everything better? Yeah. I don't remember who that was, but I thought to myself, I know. Stop counting money as value. Money and value are not the same thing. Just stop. So gross domestic product counts, obviously, money as value, and it's something that we measure everything by, and it's crazy. Because take this story that I heard from a hospital administrator talking about the complication of trying to make money as a for-profit hospital. And he said, you know, we make a lot of money when we amputate a limb from a diabetic. We make a lot of money. And we lose money every time we educate someone about how to take care of themselves. Yeah, totally, I heard that. Yes, back assward, yes. Yes, yes, yes. So that, I'm looking at my notes here because I'm going to read you my favorite quote about GDP, which no one has read yet, thank you. And it is, I'm not going to read the whole thing, a slightly abbreviated version of Robert Kennedy's statement about the GDP that he made in a speech in Kansas in 1968. He said that we had to confront the poverty of satisfaction that afflicts us all, which I call affluenza, thank you, John. And he was talking about that because, of course, measuring money isn't about satisfaction. He said, too much and for too long, we seemed to have surrendered personal excellence and community values in the mere accumulation of material things. Our gross national product counts ambulances to clear our highways of carnage. It counts the destruction of the redwood and the loss of our natural wonder in chaotic sprawl. It counts the television programs which glorify violence in order to sell toys to our children. Yet, the gross national product does not count the quality of their education or the joy of their play. It measures neither our wit nor our courage, neither our wisdom nor our learning. It measures everything, in short, except that which makes life worthwhile. So I find that like profoundly helpful to me in my life. And after being an at-home mom and homeschooling my children, which also doesn't count, through middle school, I homeschooled them. I went back into the workforce, and I worked for a group that was working on international climate policy. And that was fascinating, and I learned a lot about our environment and climate. But it was after the 2009 Copenhagen talks when we failed miserably to create a new system of international climate policy, that I was in a meeting with a bunch of sort of powerful men sitting around the table, and they were talking about this, and they were very depressed. But one of them said, "But there's stuff going on the ground everywhere." And I thought, uh-oh, that's me. I have to be that person on the ground. So part of what it is that I did was I went to business school, and I learned at business school, taking a deep dive into what might sustainable finance look like, because the problem with climate and clean, I mean, look at it. It's there. Renewable clean energy is a duh scenario. All we have to do is put the money to work to build the infrastructure. And I wanted to know why we didn't do that, and so I learned about finance and business school, and I came out believing that what we needed was a web of interconnected, resilient local economies, just like we needed a web of way that our energy system works. We need a distributed economy. And I created community-sourced capital, which was one way to help make that happen. But it was also a way to stop the whole idea that we keep having to build money and grow money. That growing money is the most important thing, because growing money isn't the most important thing. The most important thing is Gaia, is Earth. And we are a part of that, is life. Life is the most important thing. So community-sourced capital sort of takes the growing money out of the system, and it helps small businesses access capital directly from the people who know and love them, and lots of those people get involved in helping fund a business, but they do it by sharing their money. And that means they don't grow it. They share it. What they grow is their community and the value in their communities. And what I invite you to do is to join me in the work that is creating this world that isn't about money. We use money. It's a great, useful tool. But it isn't an end in itself. And I'd like to close my talk with a poem that I find really helpful when I think about how challenging this work is. If you will listen. "Breathe," said the wind. "How can I breathe at a time like this, when the air is full of the smoke of burning fires, burning lives?" "Just breathe," the wind insisted. "Easy for you to say, if the weight of injustice is not wrapped around your throat, cutting off all air. I need you to breathe. I need you to breathe. Don't tell me to be calm when there are so many reasons to be angry, so much cause for despair." "I didn't say be calm," said the wind. "I said to breathe. We're going to need a lot of air to make this hurricane together.